Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment.
All right, this is the MGB review of Saturdays of Thunder, Nova Pro Wrestling.
Nova Pro Wrestling, wow, what a blast from the past. I mentioned that we hadn't done one in a while, and I went back and looked. Oh my gosh, it's been a long time. I'm surprised we didn't do more during COVID, to be honest. When we couldn't go to wrestling events, I guess we took a different route. We started doing different things, and yeah, we kind of forgot it. I think one of the problems was, I went back and looked. It was Season 3, Episode 7, Season 3, Episode 11, and Season 3, Episode 15. So we did about three of these in 8 weeks. And that's probably more frequent than what the actual Nova Pro shows were. And it kind of got difficult because it was like, we literally just talked about these people the previous. So there wasn't as much to talk about. So I think my feeling was, hey, let's wait a little bit. And then suddenly it was like, oh my gosh, it's been a long, long time since we've done one of these. So much so that we're over 5 years behind now. When we last did one of these, I think it was like 3.5, something like that, 4. And it's been so long now, it's gone kind of a little crazy, but hey, it is what it is. This is from Saturday, October 22nd, 2016. I believe this is Springfield. I didn't write down the name of the place. Kevin Ford was on commentary. And I guess we can get straight into match one. We don't have to talk about what we did on the way because we didn't go to this one at all. Match one was Jeremiah and Malcolm Moses versus the Sandwich Squad, Aaron Biggs and Mecha Mercenary. And one thing straight away from this one, I'd always assumed that Moses was his first name. I didn't realize that was Malcolm's actually his first name.
He probably just shortened it.
It is, but I didn't realize that it was, I assumed it was his first name, not his last name. Because as soon as he came in, I was like, oh my gosh, that's Moses. I'm sure I did tell you, because I know there's been so many sign-ins for UEW in Richmond. Moses is one of those sign-ins. So I recognized him. Obviously, we saw the Sandwich Squad multiple times before. So anyway, I went with Moses for this one just to check out something. And boy, did I make a good pick for this one, Mason. Something that we nearly went to. Now, I guess we should also talk. Today is January 7th. This is our fifth consecutive snow day. So we're kind of building up a little bank of episodes for when you have lacrosse. We're just not able to record, whatever reason. So I'm not sure exactly when this is going to come out. Last weekend, just before the snow hit, there was an event. I can't remember if I told you about it or not. CZW was appearing in Maryland. And I know you're big into CZW, death matches, and all that type of thing. And but it didn't start until like 7 p.m. And it said it was going to go until 11 p.m. And then drive back 2 hours, 1 a.m. And then I got to get up at 5 a.m. And I was like, there's no way. No way at all. Anyway, it was actually listed on Cage Match. It was actually Moses' last fight. So I can give you a little bit. Since we didn't get to go, I can tell you a bit more. It was in Havre de Grace. It was at the State Theatre Arena. I've never seen this before. It lists the attendance. I've never seen it do that on Cage Match before. Now, it says CA, which I'm not sure what that is. Is that capacity? Is it basically it's this number? I don't know. 40. That sounds really low. That doesn't sound like something that's... Now, it might have been because of the snow, though, as well. If people knew the snow was coming in, people might just be like, yeah, I'm not going out. We're just going to stay and we'll see what happens. Anyway, some of the matches. Vinny Talotta defeated Sebastian Cage. Mother Endless defeated Adina Steele. I think we saw Adina Steele at the Adrenaline Championship Wrestling. Mr. Grimm defeated Tyree Taylor. Now, I actually saw the clip for this one on Mr. Grimm's social media. The quote from him is, my first match in 2022 and I broke the effing rope. And he did say effing as well, I'm not paraphrasing. But wasn't going to let that stop me from bodying my opponent. Yeah, he was looking to go to do a suicide dive to the outside. Ran to the back rope and the back rope collapsed. By which time he's running to the front and the rope's already down at the front as well, because obviously they're all connected. And then he did a suicide dive and took the guy out, but it was like, oh, it looked really cool. I've always wanted to see one of those when the ring kind of collapses like that from his... And the other match I have was Moses' match. Aaron Ashe defeated Moses, who was with Dante Caballero, who I remember from MCW as well. There are a few other matches, but I'm going to talk about those later, so go ahead, Mason.
Aaron slaps Jeremiah, and it was really loud. Aaron slams Jeremiah, and Mecha walks like on top of Jeremiah. Mm-hmm. Mecha and Aaron bite Jeremiah's arm like it's a sandwich. Mm-hmm. Aaron does a splash to
They were spinning around while they were doing that, which made it look even funnier. I think they wanted to make sure everyone in the audience knew they're doing it. And then actually they tagged in the other person, and they did exactly the same thing. For people that don't know these people, Jeremiah must be half the weight of all the other characters, I think. I think all the other characters are 350, 400 probably.
They said that Aaron, Biggs, and Mecha were 400 plus.
That's what I was thinking. So I'm sure Jeremiah was half of that.
Probably 200.
Yeah, at the most. Yeah.
Sandwich Squad is protesting meal tax.
Now, the next part of my notes, I knew you were going to bring that one up. So I went back and looked to find out what that was. So at the April 22nd, 2014 meeting of the Fairfax County Board of Supervisors, Chairman Sharon Belova announced the creation of a task force to consider a meals tax referendum. The Board of Supervisors vote on June 7, 2016 to place a meals tax referendum on the November 8, 2016 election ballot. So the ballot is, for the purposes of reducing dependence on real estate taxes, shall the Board of Supervisors of Fairfax County, Virginia, be allowed to levy a tax on prepared food and beverages, otherwise known as a meals tax, as allowed by Virginia Code 58.13833, at a rate not to exceed 4% of the amount charged for prepared food and beverages. The revenues generated shall be dedicated to the following purposes. 70% of the money raised is going to go to Fairfax County Public Schools, and 30% of the revenue will go to capital improvements and property tax relief, so people won't have to pay quite as much on their houses. All right, we'll cut to the chase. The result was, people who voted no was 290,000. People who voted yes was 249,000. So the meals tax didn't actually pass in Fairfax County.
I would have voted yes.
But Clifton, Herndon, and Vienna, who were in that area, they actually already have a meals tax. So they had nothing to do with this referendum. So certain towns in their own right can actually do that. And that's why you pay different amounts depending on which city you go to. So, but yeah, I saw the meals tax thing. And I remember it. I remember it because obviously we were in the States at that time. But I was like, I don't remember the result of it particularly. Because we go to Fairfax, but certainly not all the time. So. All right, go ahead. Keep going with your story.
I probably would have voted yes.
Everyone in the Nova fans were cheering for the no because they didn't want a meals tax because obviously that a sandwich is a prepared food. So they would have had to pay more for their sandwiches. So the Nova fans were definitely voting
no. Well, I feel like property is a lot less than the food that I would have eaten when taxed.
Uh-huh. Whether it would balance out that much. It just said a reduction. It might not amount to... The 4% that you pay might not be on food, might be less than. But yeah, the fact that it goes towards schools is definitely a good thing.
So there'd have been more money for teachers.
Yeah, it would have been.
So we would have benefited from it.
Well, we wouldn't because we don't live in Fairfax.
Well, if we did live in Fairfax,
people in Fairfax would have done
a lot from it. Aaron does a splash to Moses. Jeremiah and Moses get a bit of offense, but not for long. Mecha runs corner to corner into Moses and Jeremiah. A double suplex by the Sandwich Squad, and Jeremiah gets sandwiched. Aaron does a slam to Moses, and then an elbow to Moses by Mecha for the win.
Mm-hmm.
And they get their sandwich and gives everyone a sandwich high five.
Well, it was wrapped. That was one thing. So it wasn't like people were touching the sandwich. But yeah, they went around with the sandwich. The excitement in the ring on their faces when they know that somebody's giving them a sandwich is ridiculously fun. I loved it. I don't know the person who gave them the sandwich because I was trying to look. I was like, I don't recognize that person at all. So perhaps that's somebody who wasn't going to Nova Pro when we did, or perhaps I just don't remember them. I'm not sure. But yeah, certainly a cool feature. They had the sandwich there ahead of time, so you knew that. I wonder if they would have got it if they lost.
I don't know.
Or that could have been their snack if they... I don't know. Anyway. Fun match. Really enjoyed it. Didn't realize that Moses had fought in Nova Pro before. So that was kind of interesting to see. But yeah, always good to see the Sandwich Squad. All right. Match two was Eric Royal versus Ryo with Brandon Green. I got it right this time. And I'm going to continue with my CZW theme, Mason. Get ready for live professional wrestling with CZW Limelight, a new era of entertainment debuting at the state the first Sunday of each month. So this wasn't a one-off event. This is actually going to keep going. Each month suggests to me there's going to be 12 of these a year. Same thing. It's going to doors open at 4. Bell and live matches start at 7. The wrestling is presented by C3W. Now, that one got my attention a little bit. I'm like, that's a totally different organization. That's the Capital Combat Championship Wrestling. So I'm not sure about that. A portion of proceeds benefit Luna's House Animal Rescue and Education Center. Audience 18+. But if you're under 18, you must be accompanied by an adult, so you would have been allowed in if we'd have gone. And the rest of the matches on the card were Mike Walker defeats Boom Harden with Deshaun Pratt, who I recognize from EWA Maryland. The Amazing Graysons, JP Grayson and Tommy Grayson, defeated Prolific, Isaiah Wolf and Marcus Marquis, and The Rep, which is Chris Bishop and Nate Carter. And Griffin McCoy defeated JD Drake in the main event. And the reason I'm still talking about this is the other match I haven't talked about so far, Action Andretti lost to Ryo. So the couple of, it just happened, those top two matches had people who featured in that thing there as well. The main point of this match was Arik was unbeaten at Nova Pro at this time, so he was continuing his streak. Ryo was under the control of Money Green, but if he won this match, then he could break his contract with Money Green. And that was kind of the dilemma for this one. People wanted Arik to continue his streak, but they also don't like Money Green, so they wanted Ryo to win to try and get free. All right, how did it play out then, Mason?
Arik throws Ryo out of the ring. Ryo starts arguing with Brandon, and Arik jumps off of the apron and onto Ryo. Arik rams into Ryo three times. He lowers his shoulders a lot and is nearly like laying flat. Arik goes for a powerbomb on the outside, and Ryo turns it into a Frankensteiner into the post. Mm-hmm. A suicide dive onto the outside by Ryo. Brandon chokes Arik, and Arik does a space jam.
I was wondering if you were going to mention that. I have that in my notes. I wonder if he does those because he likes face jams.
Huh? I don't know what it is.
I listen to that clip at least once a month, so.
I don't know.
That's me just messing with you.
Yeah, I know, but like, the only thing I thought of Space Jam was because I've seen him wear a Celtics hat.
He likes basketball.
Yeah, I've seen him wear Celtics hat. That's a lot of Nova Pro.
The only other one I don't think I heard you mention was Rayo did a Code Red, which I call a Canadian
later.
Destroyer.
I
meant to look. No, that's before the Frankensteiner.
Oh, no. No, that's literally next.
I have it the other way around. But
Ryo does a Code Red, which is a Canadian Destroyer. That's my next thing. And then a Frankensteiner off of the top by Ryo.
But Arik kicks out at two.
Yeah. A Frankensteiner off of the top by Ryo.
Uh-huh.
Brandon distracts Ryo on the top, and Ryo misses the jump. Arik rams into Ryo for the win.
Yeah, football tackle. He rolled him up, but then he was so close to the ropes, he kind of maneuvered him to the middle and then re-rolled him up, which I kind of liked, actually. Mm-hmm. I thought Ryo was just going to reach for the ropes and get out of it, but I liked the... Tried it and then realized, oh, this doesn't quite work, and then repositioned himself.
It was more a football block than a tackle.
I have football tackle written down on mine.
A tackle, you like...
I understand what you're saying.
But that's what a block could look like.
One part that you missed, which I thought was kind of really interesting, Brandon Green tried to interfere with Arik, and I'm like, well, you mentioned that part, but the reason he did it, because I'm like, why would he want Ryo to win? Why would he want him to injure Arik so Ryo gets the win? But of course, that's not what he was trying to do. He wanted the ref to turn around, see him, disqualify Ryo, therefore Arik gets the win, and then Ryo has to... So I thought that was a nice little bit of storytelling mixed in there as well. And I like the part at the end where Arik stole Brandon Green's jacket as well.
Yeah, and
I'm not sure why he took it off. Perhaps it was getting hot in there or something, but yeah, he just put his jacket on. And if you'd have asked me at the start, I would have thought Brandon Green would have been way smaller than Arik Royal. Like, if you're buying a clothes for Brandon Green, I would not have thought Arik Royal would have fit in those same clothes.
Yeah.
I thought when he puts it on, I was like, it's going to be one of those joking ones where you kind of put your arms half in and it's clear it doesn't fit. It seemed to fit just perfectly, so.
And then Brandon enters the ring with a belt, and Ryo steals it and tries to hit Brandon with it.
Uh-huh. Yep. So I don't think that's been resolved, and I'm sure we're going to see something happen with that on the next event as well. All right. Match three is Cutie and the Beast. That's Bo Crockett and Innocent Isaiah versus, and I know you want to ask about this, Mason, Team IOU, which is Kerry Awful and Nick Iggy. So go on, ask your question that you were about to ask before we even started recording. I was like, hold that question.
I thought they were the Carnies.
I thought the same thing. And when I took the notes for this, because I actually go to Cage Match, because I know they have all the Nova Pro events, and I just like copy and paste, and then I just put spaces in and I just put my notes in. On a Cage Match, it's listed as Team IOU, but when the announcer announced it, he announced them as IOU the Carnies. So I went back and looked to find out. So Team IOU was from 2013 to 2016, and they've been the Carnies since 2016 to 2022. So they've been changing it. They changed it around about this time of this match. Now, one other thing I've never seen on Cage Match before, they also list the entrance music. Now, I didn't pay attention, actually, to the Carnies' entrance music for this one, but it's the Rolling Stones' Paint It Black.
Yeah, I know.
So I might have to add that to my... If I haven't already, I'm going to have to add that to my independent playlist. They are still... They are still wrestling together as well. They did wrestle in 2020. That was the last time I could find them as a team. It was the PD Express versus the Carnies, IWA Mid-South. And the changeover seems to occur here, Mason. So this is actually, what did I say? This was October?
Yeah.
So on November... SLA Straight Outta Anarchy, which is from Alton, Illinois, they are defeated, they're listed as defeated Team IOU. But then after that, in December 2016, it says the Brotherhood defeated the Carnies, and every time after that, they were referred to as the Carnies. So I think it was around this time they were switching, but yeah, why the name is the IOU, why it was IOU the Carnies, I'm not quite sure, that wasn't clear. It looks like they've been wrestling more independently recently. Nick Higgy's last match that I could find was December 18th, 2021, where he defeated Cole Radrick at KOBK in Tennessee. And Kerry Orfall's last match, he was tagging with Brett Eisen and defeated Jaden Newman and Vinny Pacifico, also in Tennessee. And that was from August 2021. All right, go on. Tell us about the match. This was a great match.
Yeah. Cutie and the Beast, which was Innocent Isaiah and Bo Crockett, they came out with the Mario theme song.
They did. Bo Crockett was dressed up as Mario, yeah. As far as I could tell. It could have been Wario. I didn't get to see the letter on the front, but it looked like Mario to me.
Wario is purple.
Oh, he does?
Yes.
Oh, I don't know that.
Not that you could tell the difference.
Nah.
He
has a red hat. I know Mario has a red. Yeah, well, I knew Bo Crockett had a red hat, but yeah. I didn't know that Wario had a different colored hat. I thought it was just a different letter on his hat.
And then Isaiah's in a princess costume.
Uh-huh. Because it's Halloween. Halloween's literally next week at this point. This was like October 24th.
Oh, okay. And then, that makes sense.
And then, yeah. Because to begin with, I was like, what on earth are they wearing for this? And then I looked at the date. I was like, oh, it's Halloween. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. Isaiah jumps off of the top onto the outside. A blind tag by Kerry and a discus lariat by Kerry Kerry just throws Isaiah into the ropes, and Isaiah makes Nick's head go into Kerry's dingo. And a dropkick into a Falcon Arrow by Isaiah, and Team IOU wins with an assisted double stomp.
Wow! Like I literally took like two notes for this, and you didn't mention either of these things, which kind of really surprises me. Like the helicopter spin, like Bo Crockett picked up Isaiah, put him on his shoulders, spun him around, and every time, of course, his feet caught the other opponents in their face and knocked them to the ground, and they did that over and over again. And as a big Roman Reigns fan, I was about to say I'm sure you'd have liked the spear and the Superman punch from Bo Crockett, but I guess not.
I see enough Superman punches with Hawk. In Cobra Kai.
Okay, fair enough.
He does the best Superman, the second best Superman punches alive.
That was you corrected yourself very quickly there. The thing that surprised me most about this one was the fact that Cutie and the Beast were so over at this point. I assumed they were going to win this one. The Carnies, it was their debut. It's very unusual that the debuting act kind of gets to win.
They wanted them to be regulars.
From what we know now, they were. But at that time, people don't necessarily know if they would have known that they were, oh, this group from Tennessee is coming to wrestle. Who? The Carnies? Never heard of them. So, I don't know. I thought it was kind of a surprise. I did like it, though, because they were clearly heels. They didn't particularly win fairly, I wouldn't say, either. So, I thought it set up good storytelling for the future.
Plenty of people win on their debuts.
No, I think most people lose their first match.
Well, most people, but plenty do.
So you're going to say it's below average, but you're still going to say it's plenty. All right, okay.
Yeah, it's not like a 1%.
All right, match four was Ethan Alexander Sharp versus who turned out to be, I think it was an open challenge, wasn't it?
Yeah.
As far as I could tell. And it sounded like he wanted to face somebody in the crowd.
He just said one lucky individual.
Yeah, and he was mocking different people. Ricky was well up for a fight. He came up to the side of the ring, he's throwing fists, and Ethan could have had a problem if Ricky had managed to get into the ring there. But anyway, somebody did come out. The Barbarian, who I have to admit I didn't recognize at all. Did you recognize the Barbarian at all?
No, but I know he's from WWE.
Oh, okay.
Or WWF.
Yeah, because they kind of mentioned that on commentary. But yeah. Okay, all right, go ahead.
There was an open challenge by Ethan, and he keeps saying one lucky individual until the crowd stops saying what and starts clapping. Ethan starts insulting the fans, and the Barbarian comes out and enters the ring. Ethan tries to leave, but he just tries to leave because he's scared of the Barbarian, and the Barbarian just headbutts him and knocks him out, and the Barbarian becomes $1,000 richer. And the refs have to carry Ethan into the back.
So that's what he was carrying as he walked in as well. Ethan was carrying. I couldn't see what it was. It looked like a contract to begin with. But now, I thought this one, I'm going to talk a bit about the Barbarian in a while because I didn't know his background. What was puzzling to me, this is, if you get somebody as big as the Barbarian in for this, why do you only have him in a 60-second match?
Because it's cheaper.
No, you don't pay him by, you think you pay him by how many minutes he's in the match?
No, I think you pay him as that's a promo.
I don't. Oh, so you don't think they paid him to wrestle then?
No, because a headbutt's not a match.
Well, it's not. But that was kind of the thing that confused me afterwards when I look back at this one. I did wonder if this match was set up and then Ethan Alexander Sharp got injured and couldn't wrestle. And then they had to find some way of getting around him not wrestling, or whether it was like a late scratch or something. No. Like, I think if Ethan Alexander Sharp had been injured a day before, he would have just said, hey, look, I can't make it tonight. And then the Barbarian, you just throw him in on a singles match, and it suddenly becomes a three-way match. But I'm wondering if it happened so late that it was just like, hey, look, you got to go out. I don't know. I'd be curious to know what the answer to that question is. But it seems strange that the Barbarian would be in his always wrestling gear, and then he's literally there for 60 seconds.
Yeah, I think
he was doing like they do at VCW, like your meet and greets, where you get the big name like Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Like, he's not wrestling, but he's going to come out with his 2x4. He's going to swing it around. And he's so I don't know if that happened or not, but I thought it was kind of an interesting one.
I think it was just probably he got paid for doing a promo.
All right. How old do you think the Barbarian was?
I looked it up. He's 63 now.
Ah, boo.
He's 63 now, so if that was 2016, right?
It was, yeah.
Yeah.
It would have been 57. It was just over 5 years ago. He would have been like 58 at that time. His birthday was in September. I was like, wow. I would not have guessed he was 58.
The paint probably helps a little bit.
I'm sure it does, but I was way out. I didn't know. I wouldn't have guessed that at all. So he's a Tongan professional wrestler, better known by his ring name, the Barbarian. Oh, Siona Havi Valahi. I'm probably pronounced that wrong. Best known for his stints in NWA, WCW, WWF, and for being part of tag teams like the Powers of Pain, the Warlord, and the Faces of Fear with Meng. He was a WCW United States Tag Team Champion with Dick Slater, and he was an NWA World Six-Man Tag Team Champion with Ivan Koloff, the Warlord, as the Powers of Pain. He went by a lot of different names, actually. Head Shrinker Sion. So I've heard of the Head Shrinkers as well. Like, I've heard of that tag team as well. King Konga, Konga the Barbarian, Sachi Nishima, Sione, Super Assassin Number One, and Tonga John. So yeah, he went by quite a few different names. I think the highlight for me as I was reading through Mason, because I wanted to know a little bit more, the 1989 Royal Rumble, he came in 26th. So knowing there's 30, he made it pretty close to the end as it was anyway. He lasted over 12 minutes as well. So that means everyone's in the ring because it's like 90 seconds, right? Mm-hmm. So it's only 6 more minutes. Rooster and Beefcake double-teamed the Big Akeem until the Warlord's tag team partner, the Barbarian, entered at 26. He broke up Rooster and Beefcake's double-teaming on Akeem. He battled with Beefcake while Rooster received a 747 splash by Akeem. Big John Studd entered at 27 and went after Akeem. Hercules entered at 28, followed by already eliminated Tito Santana's tag team partner, Rick Martel, who entered at 29. Everyone was punching each other before the final entrant, and Ted DiBiase entered at 30. DiBiase bought the slot from manager Slick to get a better spot. Ah, oh, classic DiBiase right there. He eliminated Rooster and then went after his rivals Hercules, whom DiBiase had bought as a slave. Beefcake saved DiBiase and battled Hercules. DiBiase sneaked out behind and eliminated both men from the ring, leaving it to the final five participants: Akeem, Barbarian, Stud, Martel, and DiBiase. Barbarian manhandled Martel, but Martel was able to avoid a clothesline by Barbarian, and he dropped Barbarian over the top rope. Ah, but that was pretty good. He made it to the last five. So, yeah, obviously a big name at that particular time. Now, I did look up to see if he was still wrestling. He is. Now, I think if we'd have been doing this when we originally started, I don't think I would have talked about this match, but since you're nearly 14, I don't think we're still a PG podcast, but if you are a little concerned, then just don't listen for a minute or so. What about this match, Mason? You've heard of phrase eye for an eye, right?
Yeah.
All right, this match is described as ball for a ball. This is the first tag team is called the Cock Torturer World Order, Fake Sting, Mr. Hughes, the Barbarian, the Karate Man, the Warlord and Virgil, and they defeated Chad Too Bad and Sex Ferguson at Talk and Shopper Mania 2, Rise of the Torturer at Monticello, Georgia. So he's still wrestling. I've seen some gimmick matches before. I've never heard of a ball for a ball match. I'm hoping that's just suggestive rather than literal. All right, I think we should probably move on to match five. John Kerman versus Sonjay Dutt versus the Storm of Entrails, which is Dan O'Hare and Schlack. Now, I looked up Sonjay Dutt for this one. I didn't know this. His ring name is actually modeled after a Bollywood actor, Sanjay Dutt. Mm. Have you heard of Bollywood before?
Yeah.
It's like the Indian version of Hollywood. Now, I remember when Sonjay Dutt got injured in that match against Jonathan Gresham, and I was kind of curious to see, did he wrestle again after that? Because I know he went back into, like, production and worked backstage. So, it did say, on January 6th, 2018, Dutt announced he would undergo surgery to fix a torn right Achilles. And that's exactly after the 28th of December, 2017, Powerbomb TV independent title where Jonathan Gresham defeated Sonjay Dutt. So, no, that was Sonjay Dutt's last match. That was something I wanted to go back and check. On the February 8th, 2018 episode of Impact Wrestling, Dutt returned as he and Josh Matthews became the new commentary team, and he remained on commentary until April 2018. And on January 2019, it was reported that Dutt had been granted his release from Impact Wrestling, but that meant on January 23, 2019, Dutt signed with WWE as a producer. And on June 29th, 2021, it was reported that Dutt had departed from WWE. That's what I was kind of curious. I wondered if he was still with WWE, and I honestly couldn't remember. But then it says on June 30th, 2021, literally a day after, Dutt had signed with AEW as a producer. So I kind of have forgotten that story, to be honest. All right, Mason, go ahead. Tell us about the match.
Riley Madison is with Schlack and Dano here. Sanjay does push-ups in the middle of the ring. The ref kicks out Riley. And Schlack and Dan both beat up John and Sanjay. And they get disqualified. So, you know, on to the next match. Oh, wait! Sanjay restarts the match and it's now a no DQ match.
I was a little worried. I was like, we had a super short match, and I was like, that's a ridiculously short match. I was like, you can't have matches like that back to back, but they didn't. The crowd were definitely calling for it. Sanjay played the crowd really well on this, because he was about to say something on the mic, and then he was letting the crowd do the work for him, because they're going, well, why don't you have a no DQ match? And then it was, he kind of almost made it like, oh, well, the crowd wants a no DQ match, so why don't we have a no DQ match? I thought he worked the crowd really well.
And as soon as the ref rings the bell, he gets knocked out because he can't move out the way quick enough. And Dan would have pinned John, but the ref was knocked out. So Buff Ref comes into the ring. Ref. And John gets picked up by Dan and Schlack. And Sanjay drop kicks John, and that knocks over Schlack and Dan. Moonsault onto the outside by Sanjay. Schlack and Dan gets hit with the trash can and a code breaker by... Wait, is it a code breaker? Is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a code breaker by John and instantly into a moonsault by Sanjay to Dan. And Sanjay and Dan lock in a submission, and Riley pulls the ref out of the ring. A splash by Sanjay to Dan, and then Schlack pushes John to break up the count. Schlack brings in two chairs and a ladder and Dan goes up top. Then Jeff Cannonball comes in and hits Dan with a pumpkin. And then Dan gets put through a ladder for a John Kerman and Sanjay Dutt win.
Love this one. I just loved it. There was so much going on. Like at those indie events when you get the trash cans there and yeah, it just feel that trash can was busted. They tried to get one more maneuver out of it, but it had already cracked at that point. It was done. But yeah, obviously people like Schleicher are used to setting up chairs and ladders and stuff like that, so it made perfect sense. I did go back and look at Sanjay Dutt's the end of his career just so we could see. Like we knew he was appearing on Impact and that he was literally involved in four. Obviously, Impact records a lot at the same time. I think they record like several shows. And then they don't record again for 3 months. So the last recordings in November, he had a match against Caleb Conley, Hakeem Zayn, and Trevor Lee. He also had a match against Matt Sydal. And he also tagged with Desmond Xavier and Garza Jr. And he was also involved in the Impact X Division title, which Trevor Lee won, where he defeated Desmond Xavier, Garza Jr., Matt Sydal, Sanjay Dutt, and Petey Williams. And this links back. I love it when you can link back to things like this. F4 Online announced a couple of days ago, WWE has hired Petey Williams full-time in a producer role. So Sanjay Dutt was in that role, and now Petey Williams is in that role as well. Williams signed his contract this week. He has been working in the producer capacity on a trial basis since October 29th, 2021 on the SmackDown show. It also mentioned that Jimmy Yang, I think it's Jimmy Wang Yang, I think his name is, he was actually had the same deal, but he was not signed. They released him. And as we're recording, I don't know if you know this, 2 days ago, WWE released a ton more people. Yeah,
Mia Yim.
Not 2 days ago. That's a long time ago.
Never mind.
They released a lot of people from the Performance Center, including people like William Regal, Road Dogg, Timothy Thatcher. I was like, I love Timothy Thatcher. Danny Burch. Well, I love William Regal as well, for that matter.
Why would you release William Regal?
Hideki Suzuki, Alison Danger, Dave Kapoor, Scott Armstrong, George Carroll, Ryan Katz, and then yesterday, Samoa Joe. That was kind of weird, like, for a second time. I was like, why would you wait a day? Did they suddenly have so many people on the list that they were like, oh, shoot, we missed a person. Quick, put a message out, Samoa Joe as well. Why wouldn't they just put him on the same list? I really didn't understand that.
I don't know, maybe he did something.
So there's a lot of people who, have gone. I'm gonna say when we started podcasting, we had a lot of support from the podcast with Dennis Farrell, Petey Williams. So best wishes to Petey Williams. I hope it all works out for him. It's just really worrying right now how many people that WWE are releasing. It's just like one after another after another.
There's only one person that's safe in WWE,
Vince,
and that's Roman. Because Roman's the best. Nobody
I even heard someone say Triple H might be the next one gone. Like,
he's the owner of NXT. Are you kidding?
Like,
fire.
Well, all those people in there are from NXT. That was all.
No, he's the owner of NXT. You can't fire that. Wouldn't Stephanie be mad too?
I'm sure she would. I'm hoping that's just gossip on that one, but. All right, match 6, an officer and a gentleman, Chuck Taylor and Dan Barry, versus Alexander James and Logan East and LaRoe. I like the start. I got one thing for the start for this one. Josh Fuller was ringside. He had like a red cushion, and he's there holding it out. He's got his hands outstretched, with waiting for the guys to take off their robes to put it on. So with a recent VCW review we did, we talked about the development of Logan East and LaRoe's character, and this is 2016, which is kind of in the middle, but you can see he's embracing the 1%. He was lifting his one finger up, I noticed, on this one. And I thought that was kind of cool as well. I got the commentary mixed up to begin with. I thought they said that Alexander James and Logan East and LaRoe were officer and a gentleman. So I either misheard that or they misspoke, and I'm not quite sure which it was for this one. All right, go ahead. Tell us about this one.
I think Triple H is near close to untouchable.
I would have thought so.
So I think he's fine. It's just
I think there's been a lot of people who we thought were untouchable, and they turned out not to be. So I'm not surprised on anything anymore.
Did something happen to Samoa Joe? Did he do something?
I don't know.
Did he start back drinking or something? Is that why they released him a day later? It sounds kind of stupid.
You just mentioned there was like 10 people on there. Those 10 people did not get released for issues. They got released because they consider it budget cut. Like, if they released just one person, then you might say, yeah, it's because something they did. But when you're releasing 10 people, it's just they're trying to cut numbers, and I don't know.
I just realized I'm probably going back a while with him drinking, because when I stopped watching WWE, it was still him, I think it was Jeff Hardy, it might have been.
You're going back a long time.
Oh, wait, no.
He's been NXT champion since
No,
then,
that wasn't again. Him. Never mind. Because I remember Samoa Joe raising a beer glass. That wasn't him drinking. That was Jeff Hardy. Never mind.
And perhaps you don't know Jeff Hardy's not with WWE anymore either.
I think I knew that.
Okay, that's two or three weeks ago. Now, that was because of an issue, though.
It was? What did he do?
He left in the middle of a match.
He did an Antonio Brown.
We don't quite know what happened, but he refused help, and it sounded like they... I think if he hadn't left, he was going to get asked to leave anyway. So it sounded they're not part of each other. So
how did he leave in the middle of a match?
He sounded like he was injured. Like he was holding Antonio Brown. Okay, all right. You told me how boring it was when I talked about football the other week.
No, tell
us about wrestling instead. Tell us about this match.
It was only because it's the Dolphins.
But you want to talk about the Buccaneers? Okay.
No, I want to talk about recent stuff, not your fantasy life of that happened before you were born.
It's an important team.
It happened 5 years before you were born.
Not 5 years. It was 3 years.
I thought it was 72.
It was 72.
Oh, yeah, 73.
All right. Do you want to tell my mother's maiden name as well and give out a few more details?
No.
So someone can start hacking my bank account?
I didn't even say the right year.
We just corrected it.
Well, that's your fault.
All right, before you give the answer to all my security questions and tell them who my third grade teacher was as well, go ahead and tell us about this match.
It was Miss Johnson.
We don't have grades like you have anyway. I love it when they have those questions. I'm like, that doesn't even make sense. Like, who's your kindergarten teacher? Like, we don't have kindergarten in England. So it didn't even make sense as a question.
Yeah. Alexander James. There was an armbar on the ropes to Alexander James. Chuck does an octopus stretch, and then Dan dives it.
This is why you have to read your notes before we start. Remember?
Oh,
we've talked about this.
Oh, and then
for 4 years,
and then Dan does it at the same time. A suicide dive by Chuck Taylor, and then Dan does a corkscrew onto the outside. Alexander threw Dan into the post face first. Chuck tripped Alexander and he went face first into Logan's dingo. And I can't even, I remember, I think it was a Garamaguri. I wrote it, but I just can't.
Sounds like a Japanese move.
Yeah. By Alexander, and then a ace crusher by Logan to Chuck for the win.
Mm-hmm. Now, I put this afterwards. I could have put this at the start. Now, I recognize Chuck Taylor, because I think he wrestles with Orange Cassidy on AEW, as far as I know. But when I saw Dan Barry, I was like, I don't recognize Dan Barry. I was like, I know a comedian called Dan Barry, but I was like, probably when I Google it, it's probably going to come up with the comedian, not the wrestler. All right, so I Googled it, Mason, and this came up instead, this page. Welcome to professional wrestler and comedian Dan Barry's website. So I knew Dan Barry as a comedian, but not a wrestler. I had no idea I had the same thing. Here you'll find upcoming wrestling and comedy shows, booking info, lists, links to social media, maybe one day videos and all sorts of things that people tell Dan he should have on his site. He has a podcast as well. So the last three episodes that are listed are Josh Barnett. I don't know if you know Josh Barnett, but he's from the Bloodsport events. So, you'd love Bloodsport events.
Oh, I've seen a clip of it from Cobra Kai.
Yeah,
Weren't they in the drive-in and then you get kicked in the dingo?
I'm not sure. An interview with Alex Reynolds and an interview with Brody King as well. So I'm like, oh my gosh, this might be the perfect podcast for me. So I'm going to have to check this one out. But I thought that was really weird because I was like, Dan Barry's kind of a generic name. I was like, it could easily be totally different people. And when I found out that I knew him from comedy and not from wrestling, that really kind of shocked me. So Dan Barry is somebody who I want to do a little bit more research on. We're on day 5 of Snow Day, and I was like, I don't have time to look up any more stuff. I was like, I can look that up later, but I thought that was definitely interesting for sure. Alright, match 7 was the PWI Ultra J Champion Chet Sterling, the defending champion, against Bobby Shields. Yeah, go ahead, Mason, tell us about this one. I got something for afterwards rather than before.
They start fighting before the bell rings, and Bobby jumps onto Chet on the outside. Bobby is targeting Chet's ribs. Chet does a bunch of different roll-ups and pin styles and pin maneuvers and stuff. He does that 3 times. Bobby gets a lot of offense, and Chet turns it around with a super kick. I kind of hate how that happens. Like, when Bobby could do, like, 15 super kicks and a bunch of other moves, and then it instantly turns around with just one super kick. I think that's kind of stupid. But Chet catches Bobby with a superplex, A running STO by Chet. A gut buster, then a fisherman suplex by Bobby. Chet gets out of the torture rack. And Chet's trying for a sunset flip, but Bobby's manager is holding on to him. And Buff Ref just uses his buffness and kicks his hand. And then Bobby has to let go. Chet wins with a frog splash, and then after the match, Logan gives Chet an ace buster.
Mm-hmm. And this is actually setting up for the next event, because obviously, as this is in the past, we can already look ahead to see what actually happened. After this, it was the Carnies, Alexander James, Bobby Shields, and Logan Easton LaRoe against Cutie and the Beast, Chet Sterling, Chuck Taylor, and Dan Barry. So those kind of matches that we've just had have all been set up to... ready for the next event with Logan coming out there and interfering. But yeah, Logan coming out and interfering, perfect. Gives him that perfect, add that extra little heel element to him again, make him unpopular with the crowd. It all works towards that. I did look for this one. I was curious if the 1% were actually on the outside. Not at this point. This is less than a year
they
until...
the 1%, they but I...
They didn't have their section.
They didn't have
up,
their section. They weren't even in that arena yet.
Yeah, well, that's what I just said.
Yeah, but there was a few of them there. I've seen some
of
them there.
Oh, individual members? Yeah, but as that group that we recognize, they certainly weren't there. Not at that point, anyway. So that must be coming pretty soon, I'm guessing. I actually looked. Chet Sterling, I don't really remember very well. And the only reason I don't remember him is he actually wrestled twice at Nova Pro when we were there, and it was our first two events. One of them, I think he was tagging with Arik, so it wasn't as a singles person. So, yeah, I just didn't recognize him very much. And for Bobby, I was looking to see how much fights Bobby had this year. One of the quotes right at the end of the year said, "Even though I only wrestled three times this year, Brody was with me every time. I don't care if I wrestle one time or 100 times this next year. I'm going to wear this shirt every time." Brody Lee shirt. I mentioned Brody King in the last segment, so I just want to make sure I make it clear this was Brody Lee. And the last match was match 8. This has been set up from the last two events. An I Quit match. Brandon Day versus Tim Donst. And I think I gotta let you go on first on this one, Mason, as well. Yep, go ahead.
Donst introduced himself as the guy who is going to be charged with murder tonight. But wouldn't that be, like, how could you get charged? Yeah, it would be voluntary manslaughter, but but don't you, like, sign waivers?
I think it's a joke.
I know it's a joke, but, like, being technical here.
Now, this is where, really, I should call in Micah Pellegrini. He has a new podcast. It's been going for about a year. It's called In Kayfabe, and it actually discusses things in wrestling from a legal standpoint, like what you would be charged with for certain things. Like when somebody sets somebody on fire in the ring, like, would that be arson or stuff like that? And they look at the codes. If I'd have realized for this one, I could have drafted Micah in for this one. All right, Micah, I'm definitely tagging you in this one, so
yeah.
Hopefully you're listening,
like,
for
earlier
this one.
In there, innocent Isaiah tagged Bull on his behind.
Uh-huh.
That's sexual harassment, isn't it?
Possibly, yeah. He could, of course, say he was joking. Like, you didn't literally mean he was going
to
murder
missed,
him. It's a figure of speech.
Oh, yeah.
So he might have got around it that way. I'm not sure. But all right, what else?
Tim grabs the ring bell, and Donst gets a figure four locked in with a woo sign in his mouth that a fan brought, and then
funny.
Brandon gets out of it and rips the sign in half.
Uh-huh.
Brandon does a suicide dive and goes too far and hits his head on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And Brandon...
High risk, high reward.
Brandon steals a fan's chair and hits Donst with it. Brandon bites Donst.
Mm-hmm.
And Donst gets a gory stretch. Donst puts the bell on Brandon's dingo and then rings it. And then the whole time the commentators are talking about the vibration that must have brought. Donst takes the padding off of the floor, but he was the one who got slammed on the floor.
That's often how that works.
Yeah. Brandon is trying to make Donst quit, and then Donst said that Brandon has halitosis. It's bad breath.
Yes.
And then Brandon throws Donst onto the table. I actually had to look that one up. I didn't know what halitosis was.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Never been, what's the word? Oh,
not
gosh,
a word you've had to come up with so far. That's
no,
good.
No, not coming up. Yeah. I've never been diagnosed with it. So
there you go. That was good.
Yeah. Brandon tries to jump on the table, but comes too short. Like, he had to jump, land, and then do a second jump to even put his arms on the table. I don't think he fully committed, and it really didn't look that good either. Yeah, and Donst's head in a chair, and Brandon tries to hit the chair, but the chair is a little too low on his head, and he just ends up hitting Donst's head. A powerbomb to Donst through the table. Brandon ties Donst's wrist together with a chain. Donst uses the chain to choke Brandon later on the ropes. And a codebreaker on the apron to Brandon. A suicide dive by Donst with his hands still tied. The ref attempts to untie Donst with his hands. He didn't do it. But
it loosened him a little bit, but it didn't really work. Yeah.
Is that really the ref's job to do that?
Well, they did talk about that on commentary. Yeah, really. I thought he would just go across to a fan and like, can you undo this? Because it was a pro Tim Donst crowd, that's for sure.
Yeah, I don't think that the ref should be doing that. I think it's like, if they're cheating like Buff Ref did, like kicked the manager's hand.
Wait, there's no cheating in this because it's no DQ.
Yeah, there's no cheating in it, but that's like cheating. You should interfere to that.
Yeah.
But you shouldn't be interfering when it's a no DQ match. Cause
Right.
That's basically like taking the wrestler off the table after the ref sets them on, after the person sets them on the table.
I'm agreeing with you.
I don't think it's his right to do that. Brandon grabs an end of the chain because a little bit did come undone, and he does a low blow with the chain. Brandon gets a bag of Legos and stomps on Donst's head on top of the Legos. Brandon jumps.
I didn't think it was Legos to begin with. I thought it was going to be pushpins or whatever you want.
Yeah,
to call
it. I thought it was going
to
be.
And I was waiting for him to come out, and then it was like Legos. I was like, okay, that's kind of funny. Yeah. It's funny.
Brandon jumps off the top, and Donst catches him with an Ace Crusher on top of the Legos. Mm-hmm. Then fans untie Donst on the outside while he has a little time. Donst goes to the spare chairs. And throws Brandon into the spare chairs, and then throws a bunch of chairs at him, and then wins by wrapping the chain around Brandon's like head.
Now I actually don't really like. I don't know if we talked about the fact it was an I quit match. Like there was multiple times when the referee was given the mic and he was putting it next to him. I'm like, they're not going to quit at this point. Like I'm not a big fan of the I quit match. Like some of the times because you'd want to keep pummeling them and you'd want the ref to step in and go, it's over. But they would have to kind of stop what they were doing just to get the microphone in there and then going, yeah, I'm not saying it. Like I'm good. So I'm not a big fan of that.
Cool, because you can like insult them in the middle of a match for the whole crowd.
I guess so.
Like the halitosis.
I'm not a big fan of that style, but in the end they got it. Tim went straight over to where the commentary table was, stood on one of their chairs, and then the ref came across, raised his hand, and I enjoyed the match. I thought the match was good. I thought it was a good finish to the story. They'd obviously been battling back and forth for a while. One thing I saw in one of the earlier matches, and I don't remember who it was, I saw somebody in the crowd, and he had, I wouldn't say it was a full safety jersey, but there was clearly orange chevrons on the front. And I was like, oh. But I was like, no. It's too early for this.
He didn't
like,
trip on his shoes.
Yeah, like, we know it's not coming up yet, and particularly not with having an I quit match. So, it was just coincidence that somebody had a part of a safety jacket on, but we know it's coming at some point. I don't know when it is, but that's one of the things I'm most looking forward for, the safety first turn of Tim Donst. And it's probably more the next match when he fully embraces it and people are like, oh yeah, remember when he tripped on the last one? So I'm really interested to see how that happens, but I still think we've probably got another... I think we've got another 9 pay-per-views until we get to the one where we started to join in for this one. I did like also at the end, obviously now it would be like catches on IWTV. This is way before IWTV. This was when it was still, was it Power Slam TV or something? Powerbomb TV?
Yeah, Powerbomb.
I can't remember which one it was. It was like, find all our shows on smartvideo.com. I was like, oh my gosh. Like, that used to be it. People used to buy the videos. Now we're spoiled. We just, literally, we can say, do you want to watch some wrestling? Like, pretty much. It's the Netflix of wrestling. You just go to IWTV, everything's there. Title Match Network, we got so many of those, and they're all instantly there for us to watch. We're really spoiled that we can watch wrestling from all around the country. You can pick a person and just type that in as well. Like, you can type in Eric Royal, and you can just watch the last 5 matches that Eric Royal had as well. So, yeah, we've been pretty much spoiled as it comes to this one. Kind of a short one, but they did a lot of video editing on this, which I really appreciated. Like, you didn't have to watch the intermission or anything. There was big gaps between one wrestler leaving and then the start of the next match. You could tell they edited all that stuff out. So it was like 2 hours and 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So I'm sure the proper event was probably closer to 3 hours with the intermission in there. But I thoroughly enjoyed this. I always did like Nova Pro. I haven't lost any of that, and I'm kind of excited to probably do some more of these in the near future as well, because I want to see how some of those storylines develop. Anything you want to add in for this one?
Yeah. If wrestling has, like, a lot of, like, illegal stuff, Santa does so much illegal stuff, too. Just to start off with slavery.
Breaking and entering.
Slavery.
Like, it's not slavery. They choose
the
to work.
The elves.
They can leave at any time they like.
Okay. Well, I'm sure it's illegal to fly something in the air without proper
registration. They have permission.
From who?
They track him. That NORAD tracker or whatever it's called that you
NORAD
look at.
NORAD tracker?
That you look to see where he is. He has permission.
Okay. Breaking and entering. Littering.
You've given Santa permission. I don't know anyone that's not given Santa permission to do that. Littering?
Not littering. He's putting presents under...
He's not littering. That's giving a gift.
Destruction of property.
There's no destruction of property.
You're eating the cookies and the milk.
It's not destruction. They're given to him. Because there's a note normally that goes with it as well.
Oh, you're supposed to leave a note?
Or something.
I've never
like
done that.
So, yeah. All right.
What about putting
I've managed
kids
to
on your
swat
lap.
These off pretty quickly.
What about
so
putting kids on your lap?
Parents have given you permission to do that. They've pushed you. Go sit on Santa's lap while we get a picture.
When I watched The Christmas Story, they got in line and then the elves brought them to Santa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. But the parents have already given permission for that. I don't like Christmas Story.
You don't?
No, it's terrible. It's no Die Hard, that's for sure.
Music was Zigzag by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. https://creativecommons.org/licenses/by/3.0/